It's Behind the News live on Radio Ghana, Accra. A suspected case of Ebola has been reported at the Presbyterian Hospital in Boko in what will be Ghana's first Ebola if confirmed. The medical director of the hospital, Dr. Joseph Yamenu, said the patient was brought to the hospital dead from Burkina Faso. Dr. Joseph Yamenu has joined me on the line for more details. Good evening, Doc, and you're welcome to the program.
Good evening, madam.
Well, Doc, if you can raise your voice a bit, we can hardly hear you.
Yeah. All right, I'll do that.
All right. Doc, can you confirm the suspected case of Ebola at the Presby Hospital at Boko?
Yes, we see a case, a death, brought in dead case from Burkina Faso, and we suspect it could be Ebola hemorrhagic disease.
And you are saying that you suspect it could be Ebola disease, but
yeah.
What signs or symptoms did you see to show that it could be a suspected case of Ebola?
Yeah, the reason why we are suspecting, the man is about 30 years. We had a febrile illness about 3 days ago. And then it got worse today. So they rushed him from Burkina Faso to our facility. By the time they brought him, he had already passed away. But we then saw that he had been bleeding from the nose. And then we asked from the relatives, some of the symptoms, and we got about 4 symptoms in addition to the bleeding nose. So we said, all right, then let's suspect it. And we took the blood for testing.
And what did the test confirm?
No, we took the blood today, we gave it to the municipal director of health services. And they have to send it to Gucci, and then maybe get the results.
Doc, earlier you said that the suspected patient was bleeding, and there were other more signs depicting that it was Ebola. Can you tell us some of the other signs too that you saw?
Yes, the important thing is the fever, the vomiting, and then sore throat, and then the muscle weakness. Five. He didn't have vomiting and diarrhea. But the fact that he was brought in there, a young man, who had a fever in his about 3 days ago, that's why we had the suspicion.
So, Doc, what preventive measures have been put in place to ensure others are not infected, even before the case is confirmed?
Yeah, even this one, what I think is, when they brought the patient in, the nurse at the emergency had to receive the patient, brought in the gadgets to resuscitate the patient. It's only when he started touching the patient, taking BP, and then we saw that there was no pulse. So he had already contacted the patient, and then he was scared that after seeing the blood bleeding from the nose, the nurse was scared, but I said, oh, no, you shouldn't worry. Since he hasn't contacted with the blood, he didn't worry.
But, Doc, how prepared is your hospital, I mean the Presbyterian hospital, in case such a case of Ebola breakout? How prepared are you to combat this disease?
Yeah, we are ready. We have earmarked a place for isolation What we don't have is the dress.
The protective dress.
The protective dress, yeah. That will help us to approach the patients. Like this one, we have to take a theater gown and before we approach the patient to take the sample. So we don't have the protective gear.
You don't have the protective gear for now.
Yeah.
And is the municipal or regional directorate of health aware of this suspected case?
Yes, today we met. It's maybe just coincidence because today that we met to plan the strategy very well. Immediately after the business, some few hours, then we got this case. What we are trying to do is to get a, no, we don't have it. We want to get a raincoat, the up and down, and then maybe show some rubber that we can put it in our face and head so that and then get some goggles. That's what we are doing locally. That's what we are planning to do. And we have bought some of the raincoats. And then we wanted to show the one that we put as a head to come and cover the face. That's what we are trying to do. That we have got the isolation word. We are prepared to receive in case there's anything.
Well, Duncan, have you reported to authorities, health authorities in Accra, and have you taken blood samples also for testing at Noguchi?
Yeah, you have taken the blood. You know, we go by, we have the ladder. We report to the municipal director of health service, and then the municipal director will then report to the regional director. Then you go that way. So we don't report straight to them.
You don't report straight to Accra, but there are processes that you follow. All right, Doc. We want to thank you for your time with us tonight. Dr. Joseph Yao Menu is the medical director at the Presbyterian Hospital in Boko. Meanwhile, the Boko Municipal Directorate of Health has confirmed the suspected case, and an official of the Municipal Health Directorate says they are yet to liaise with the Regional Directorate of Health to look at how to deal with the suspected case. And also joining us on the line is Dr. Justice Yangsin, who is the Deputy General Secretary of the Ghana Medical Association. Good evening, Doctor, and welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Doc, we keep hearing of suspected Ebola every now and then. What do we need to know before we can say this is Ebola or this patient is suffering from Ebola?
Well, to be honest with you, you cannot just look at a patient in the face and say this is a case of Ebola, or you can say a suspected case because of the presentation. You know, the presentation is such that you could start off with the usual symptoms we have in our communities when we get malaria, the fever, the headache, the chills, the weakness, and all that. And then as it progresses, you get other things like bleeding and all that. So you need to do what we call a careful history taking, trying to find out whether the person has had contact with anybody who may have had Ebola or has traveled to a country or a community where Ebola may have been present, or the kind of job the person does, is say a hunter who has gone into the bush to bring some dead animal, you know, stuff like that. So it is all based on suspicion. And then beyond that, you go ahead and do the confirmatory test by taking the blood sample. Now, Ebola falls into a group of diseases we call hemorrhagic fevers, the presentation. All it means is that ultimately you have a fever as well, and there is bleeding It is caused by all kinds of viruses, yellow fever, dengue fever, all kinds of things. So there are five distinct groups of viruses. We are not going to do a lecture here. Family groups that most times will cause a lot of this hemorrhagic fever. So it is not that simple, but now that we have a situation where there are a lot of cases around, once you get those symptoms in your facility, the first thing is to rule out that aspect of it.
Well, Doc, you've mentioned that Ebola has symptoms similar to other diseases that we have known for years. But these other diseases, when they occur, does it mean that within 3 days, 2 days, a week, then the person passes on?
No. Even Ebola, you don't pass on in 2 days. When you get the infection, we are talking about incubation period of about 21 days and all that. It is just that, because we have a situation where it is around us, a lot more information about it is, ongoing. But the truth is that for us as medics, we've learned about these things, we've read about them, we keep getting sporadic outbreaks here and there. It is not too often, but in the 70s, we had a couple. In the 80s, the 90s, we had a couple. Most of them haven't been that close because majority were around the Congo Valley area, Congo, DR Congo, Congo, Brazzaville, Gabon, those areas. It is now that West Africa in particular is more or less bearing the brunt of Ebola. So it is not strange, except that once you have an outbreak like we have now, there is that high index of suspicion, such that anybody who presents the symptoms of a possible hemorrhagic fever, you go ahead and rule out Ebola by doing the confirmatory test. What you just described, it's possible it could be Ebola. It's also possible that it may not be, just like you said earlier, what the doctor described, just like you said earlier, we've had, information here and there, there's been a suspected case either in confirmatory or either in colony, but all of them have turned negative. So it is something that we need to keep our eyes on. And I'll commend the doctor and his team for at least getting that close and having that suspicion, because if you make the suspicion and it turns out to be one, by the time you realize, it would have caused a lot of havoc. But what saddens me, if you listen to the doctor, it is so sad. It just tells us our poor state of preparedness. You listen to him, they were looking for rubber and stuff, raincoat, stuff like that, just to cover themselves. This is how porous our preparation is. And this case, as you described, typically exposes us when it comes to the huge talks we do on the platforms and press conferences and all that, but we forget that the facility level is where the action really takes place. Boko, for me, there should even be a border post there. By now, protective clothing should be around the Boko area, such that they could have even called, whether it's immigration or port health, even supply them with a few of these protective clothing to put on. But my colleague tells you, we are looking for plastic rubber and plastic materials and stuff just to improvise. It shows our ill-preparedness. It is sad.
Doc, so this particular case, how safe are the doctors who handled this dead patient? You heard the doctor and he believes it is an Ebola case. If it's one, how safe are they?
But it is unfortunate because as we speak now, the isolation centers we are supposed to have in the country are not even in place properly. And now that he is at Boko, assuming the confirmatory test comes out positive, if this patient is still alive, we are going to be exposed. Now, all those who have come into contact with the patient, including the doctor, will have to be monitored properly, what we call surveillance, and then they will have to test their samples as well. I don't know the level of contact that happens between the third patient and the doctor. But from what he said on radio, I'm going to talk to him after here anyway. From what he said on radio, the nurses had already intervened because the patient was in shock. What he means is that we have to go in, set a line, take blood samples, put on infusions. So there's been some direct contact. And clearly, he told all of us they were ill-prepared. They didn't have the protective gear. So I'm actually wondering the level of contact and what may or may not have occurred. We just hope that it doesn't turn out to be one, because if it is, all those who had contact with the third patient will have to be monitored properly for us to be able to rule out the likelihood of a possible infection or otherwise.
And Doc, has the issue revived the argument for an insurance cover for EO members?
Well, you see, this is the bit that unfortunately it looks like something has been added. Yes, issues of insurance for doctors is a general principle thing that can be discussed at some day. But what has actually happened now is that there's supposed to be a core team of health professionals, doctors, pharmacists, nurses, cleaners, or orderlies, as we call them, laboratory people, who, assuming that this case turns out to be one, God forbid though, will have to be at the isolation center with this patient day in, day out. And these are people who are going to be exposed directly to the virus, because they will almost always be in contact with the patient. Now, this group of people, who in all should be about 150 to 200 for the whole nation, are the ones who are seeking some form of insurance cover at this point in time. And I think it is just fair, because the kind of job that they do out there, it is so hazardous, it is so risky, it is dangerous, they could lose their lives as a result. Why not pass on the risk to an insurance company if they are ready to take it up? Such that the people will go in their confidence that at least in the unlikely event that the unfortunate thing happens to them, be it death or incapacitation or whatever it is, through the policies that I have, my kids or myself will be able to survive to some extent. I mean, it is just fair. In any working environment, hazardous jobs comes with a premium in terms of insurance cover. And we think that this is not out of place. Those who are asking for, I think it is legitimate. The medical association formally hasn't asked that all doctors be provided insurance cover, no. But for this 150 or 200 people who are going to be at the forefront of the fight against Ebola for the whole nation, it is just fair that a caring nation will give them some insurance cover, some protection. I think it is fair.
Well, and Doug, briefly, for purposes of education, what does one do when you come into contact with a person who shows signs of Ebola? Run away?
Well, no. When you say contact, you mean physical contact, or you just saw somebody at a distance?
Yes, physical contact. Yes,
well, honestly speaking, as we speak now, because the scare is with all of us, and then the fact that the disease can also get to our body, the most important thing is that if for some reason anybody has gotten into contact with, let's use a test case, this suspected case, as we have in Boko. Anybody has been in direct contact with the patient the last couple of days, they should all be identified by the surveillance mechanism that has been put in place by the Ministry of Health, assuming there is a functional one in and around Boko, assuming all of them should be identified. By now, we should be making preparations to at least quarantine them, or if not quarantine them, limit their ability to mingle with the rest of us. Samples should be taken. The proper screening should be done such that we can eliminate who may have the virus or who may not have. If it turns out that the case is negative, as in this particular patient we are talking about, then automatically all of them we will assume are negative. But if it turns out that they are positive, then it will mean that all these group of people will then have to be monitored at least for 3 weeks, because the incubation period is a 3-week window. Then, beyond the 3 weeks, we also need to look out for any possible signs that will be shown. So, it is not an easy task. We need to prepare ourselves properly.
Doc, we want to thank you very much for your time with us.
You're welcome.
Dr. Justice Yangson is Deputy General Secretary of the Ghana Medical Association, and it's unfortunate all our contacts to the Health Ministry and the Ghana Health Service yielded no results as officials refused to comment. For now, it's Behind the News, live on Radio Ghana Accra. Behind the News is also live on Garden City Radio 92.1 in Kumasi. In Kofodia is on Sunrise FM 106.7 and in Sinai Radio BAR 93.5. The ongoing limited voters registration exercise enters the fifth day with reports of low turnout. The exercise, which is meant to capture first-time voters and people who could not register for the last elections, said to be generally peaceful. However, in some areas, the exercise is characterized by irregularities and confusion. It took the intervention of the Deputy Minister for Local Government and Rural Development, Nilante Vanderpoel, to restore sanity at the Akragel Senior High School Registration Center whilst monitoring the exercise in the capital city. A prospective voter who has tendered in his passport as proof of his identity did not understand why he should further be interrogated by the registration officers. Let's listen to SF.
The reason why I said that, this is a passport, this is not a ordinary, I'm kind of pleased, this is not a ordinary ID card. And I'm very aware that this passport contains my every information. If you are doubting it, you go through it, you find my address and everything in it. What you didn't saw it in it, you asked me, it doesn't matter. I'm coming, one after the other. They asked me my father's name, and here they say, surname is here, but he's still asking me, because I want to. My surname is here.
Well, excerpts of the confusion at the Akragel Senior High School during the registration exercise. And the MP for Dududu and Deputy Minister for Local Government and Rural Development, Nilante Vanderpoel, has joined us on the line. Good evening, and welcome to the program.
Good evening, thank you very much. I was also enjoying the effort.
And kudos for bringing about sanity at the Akragel Senior High School registration. Did you have a hard time there?
Well, it's interesting. You see, I think that people must always keep their emotions down. The agent, the registration assistant, always will want to ask questions to be sure, certainly sure about the prospective person who is going to register, in order not to warrant any, disqualification or double registration, or to be sure, especially when the person is not 18, they want to be sure about why you didn't register the last time, where were you, and all those things. But some people haven't got a patience, and they see those questioning as interrogation. And I believe that was exactly what happened at Akragel. This gentleman will not just countenance the fact that he is being asked questions about his grandfather, his grandmother, and all those things. And he thought that that was not necessary. And the ladies are also insisting that those are some of the questions they need to put on the data sheet in order to have the correct biodata. But you see, the issue was not just about the prospective voter and the registry assistant. It's about the other people who are around who thought that this guy was unduly delaying the process and that he was being too, as we normally use in our parlance, too low. You know, so it was total confusion. And I thank God we were there at the right time. I advised the two of them. I took them through the rules of the game. I told the gentleman to exercise his restraint and patience and allow the assistants to ask the question. And once he has answered the question satisfactorily, he hasn't got a problem. They will register him. So that's what happened. I think the issue is always there should be somebody who will try as much as possible to calm the waters. Right. Somebody who will be ready to explain issues to both sides. I let them understand the fact that even though they also have the right to ask questions, sometimes the tonation is also a problem. If you're asking somebody a question, the way you ask the question will make the person, especially when the person is an elderly person, and you, the person asking the question, is seen to be a younger person. So they should also be careful the way they also ask questions. And they all agreed. And at the end of it all, sanity prevailed. So I thank God for it.
You are now in the Eastern region. Have you encountered another problem during your visit?
Agatha, we didn't encounter any problem at all at the various centers. It was beautiful. In fact, what even made it more beautiful is the fact that I bumped into Nana Fridia Ajiman, and one of the MPP communicators and party executives, and he was also doing the monitoring with the MPP regional youth organizer, and we all joined together. Our car was following their car, and we went to several registration centers together. And at the end of it, we all together briefed the press on what we have seen. Generally, let me say, peaceful and fluid, but the turnout very low.
Well, we'll still continue with that, but we have reports that your delegation in the Eastern region had an unfortunate encounter with a Kia car driver who refused to move away to allow your team to continue its tasks. And how did you deal with him? What exactly happened?
We nearly, I thank God for saving our lives. This Kia driver was driving, I think they are from a funeral and a big drunk, with some six other guys, one guy and a lady at the front. And I think when he was driving, all of a sudden, he saw that there is a very huge hole or ditch in ahead of him. So when the convoy was coming, he allowed the first convoy to move. Then all of a sudden, he ran in between the first car and the car of the deputy Eastern Regional Minister. But for the driver swerving, if the driver had swerved a little bit more to his right, he would have entered that hole, and I don't know what would have happened. He was lucky he decided to step on his brake so fast, and if anything at all, hit the back of the Kia truck. But lucky enough, he didn't also hit the back of the truck. So the truck, the back of the truck and the nose of the vehicle was just like a whisker. And so we all stopped at once, and we were behind her. So when we stopped, the police, her bodyguard and my bodyguard all got down to go and question the driver why he drove that way. He said, Then the others in the car jumped and they assaulted the policeman. Can you believe that?
Well,
they assaulted the policeman, tore the buttons of the policeman, took away their name tags, and they... When we got down trying to separate them and to cool things down, they used their mobile phones to be taking shots of us and some other things, and say, you people, you be too much for idea, so many, all these unnecessary things. And I think people should respect sirens.
But me, didn't they know you were government officials?
I think that was what rather angered them and annoyed them.
Well.
Because the comments were making, it's like the frustration on the frustration on in them for using that part of the road, in Sawam Suhum Road. I decided that, in fact, went into them and decided to vent their anger and spleen on us. And the unfortunate thing is that the cars behind us, because it created a traffic, the cars behind us will not even ask what has happened. They rather turn their anger and frustration on us.
All
right. So it's like we the victims have now become the culprit, and everybody was lashing at us. But it was cool. We left everything without any incident.
Well, we thank God. And back to the registration issue. There are reports of low turnout at the registration centers. How does it reflect in the areas you have visited?
In fact, let me say this. In the Yilokrobo district, I think it was quite okay, because I visited close to about 7 centers in that area, and the up to now, by the time I went there around 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock, up to about 12 o'clock, some of the centers had 132, 127, 107, 53, 56, 62, you know, but it was quite okay. The process was quite good. The places, and just one place that they said they had a little problem with their machine, but it was restored. In New Jabin, it was also quite okay. It was quite impressive. But it was Ayin Suyamno that I thought was a problem. If you consider the fact that at one police station, for all the 5 days, it registered only 14. Then at another 32. Then at another 28. Another 17. The highest was 52. It was a bit disturbing. But you know, Agatha, the basic problem is the fact that these are polling centers, sometimes far away, about a kilometer or 2 kilometers from communities that are supposed to access that polling registration center. So it was quite difficult and frustrating for the people. Not to count on the bad nature of the roads there. If you want the people to travel all the way to come and register from their communities, and they are going to walk about one kilometer, 1.5 kilometers to access a registration center, it would take a patriotic citizen to want to do that. So I think the Electoral Commission is to look at the registration centers once again, because one registration center is supposed to cater about 5 communities, and the communities are far away from the center. That's why they low turn up. And also, you know, this is a farming area. People want to go to farm in the morning before coming to register in the afternoon when they have returned from the farm. So that by the time they come back, they are tired. And if the road is also bad, why would they, what will induce them to go and register?
Yeah.
So I think a lot is about, I talked to the DCE. He has said that he's going to get the information services van from Asamankese. He hasn't got one. He's going to get the NCC people from Asamankese to come to join forces. And he's also going to send an SOS to all the churches within the district, that they make a special appeal to prospective applicants to register, all those who have not registered, to do so within the next 5 days. So hopefully their numbers will go up a little in the next few days before the end.
There are also reports of prospective voters using weighing cards, birth certificates as proof of identity, and in some cases, some even don't have ID cards. Did these reports come to your notice during monitoring?
Yeah, we heard of one or two situations. You see, and those communities, I seriously believe that the best way anybody will prove his age and identity as a Ghanaian is a weighing card or the birth certificate. Because if the person hasn't got a national ID, the person hasn't got a driving license, for example, and in those communities, and you still will not, maybe the person will not get 2, 3, 4 people to come and testify. I think the best that the person will do is to bring his or her birth certificate. I think in those areas, like some of the villages in Krabwa, Kota areas, you should even be happy with the fact that this person has taken pains to even acquire a birth certificate. You know, because in those areas, most of people are delivered through traditional birth attendance, or some people have difficulty in going to antenatals and even going for postnatals in order to acquire birth certificates. So it's quite encouraging to even see people coming forward with their birth certificates. So if that is not one of the requirements, and so it becomes a problem, I think they become frustrated. They will go back and they wouldn't want to come back and book all the distance to register. Wow. One or two cases, and I and another idea were this, and we said that they should go according to the rules of engagement. But then, if all the agents there think that the person should be allowed to register with their facilities, why not?
Briefly, in connection with the low turnout, is it likely to affect the assembly elections?
Well, that is where I'm concerned, not only the assembly elections. Agatha, here, I think Ghanaians must get to know and understand the fact that if by the time we are going to have the assembly election, the Constitutional Review Commission has finished with their report and Ghana is ready to go for a referendum, the referendum will happen in the same time as the assembly election. The two will be held at the same time. And by the Constitution, in the referendum, I think we should have 40% and above in order for that to be that particular issue to be accepted. And I've never, past years, I think the percentage turnout for assembly elections is about 35%. And if we look at what is happening and we don't encourage people to register and also to turn out to vote in assembly election, and the assembly election is going to coincide with the, or it's going to go side by side with the referendum, then we may have a problem as a country. And I think all of us will need to intensify our campaign, intensify our education, intensify our information, and to let people register, and even more encourage people to vote in massively during the assembly election in order that we'll be able to carry through the various issues that we put to us at the referendum.
We want to thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, my sir.
Nilante Vanderpoel is MP for Odududu and Deputy Minister for Local Government and Rural Development. Let's also find out the position of the NPP on the registration exercise. And John Boedu is the national organizer of the party. Mr. Boedu, welcome to the program.
Yeah, thank you.
And if you could raise your voice a bit. You have been monitoring the exercise. What is your view so far?
Yeah, thank you very much. Good evening to your cherished listeners. I think that my view will not differ a lot from what Nilante was telling you. It's about malfunctioning of the machines as usual. In some areas, people don't seem to know that the Supreme Court had ruled that any giant car was up.
Hello, Ms. Abwedu, if you could reposition yourself a bit.
Yeah, they seem to want to use the NHIS card, which is creating a lot of problems. First, age-long issue about people who otherwise are not qualified under the law to register. That people who are not Ghanaians, for instance, or minority people who are minors. I also have other problems that we are facing. By and large, I think that's the main problem. With regards to the numbers, I don't know whether we have any statistical basis to determine whether the numbers are okay or not. I would have expected, and that's my view, that this ritual or annual or quarterly problem that we go through by this registration exercise and all. I think that if we had perfected our national identification system, and for 6-7 years, a country like Ghana couldn't go through it. Something that before Jesus was born, they were able to count themselves. I think that this has been a problem that we go through. We spend a lot of money, we spend a lot of resources. At the end of the day, our registers are not credible. Because of the multiple registrations that we are not finding answers to. I think that is embarrassing. I don't think that we need to be going through this. So by and large, I think that it's okay. Some few skirmishes here and there.
So the challenges of the registration exercise, as you outlined, how do you expect the Electoral Commission and the other stakeholders to address these challenges?
I think that with regard to malfunctioning of the machine, I think that Electoral Commission needs to have a right place response to correcting and getting information from their people on the field with regards to the faulty machines as they arrive. Well, there are some areas that it takes a whole or 2 days to be able to put it in order. In some cases, initially when it was started, especially in Garu time, as at yesterday, they weren't able to print out the daily printout that political parties must have. I think that it is worrying because it is the basis for checking how many people registered and as to whether or not correct entries and others were made. Initially, yesterday, for instance, we had difficulties in catching up. It started last 3 days where the DC there had it wrongly that the MPP agent for which we provided with a poll book to record names of people that registered want to verify even the printout and if possible get telephone numbers of registrants so as to follow up after registration. And they didn't understand. I think that they had wrong information as if the MPP was forcing registrants to give them to. And I think that it was something that was needless.
So, Ms. Agwedu, what have you done to encourage people to turn out to register?
On our own, through our party structures, we've been mobilized and we've been going house to house. For instance, at Kolebu Police Station, where there is one polling station for the Kolebu electoral area, we have almost about 6, 7, 8 polling stations under them. And although the distances are not far as compared to other areas, the lack of publicity from, I think, the Electoral Commission is affecting it. And not only it's even part of publicity. Lack of directional signs that leave a would-be voter or registrant to follow to where the center was staged. For instance, if you come to Hijaz in Kolegono electoral area, and that polling station that they stationed the machine, we are expected 31 polling stations to move to come and register there. And if you go around those normal traditional polling stations, there's no directional sign indicating or directing anybody to where the thing is being done. And I think that Electoral Commission, this has been a problem over the years where electoral areas are chosen as a registration center, and they don't seem to do anything about it, and I think it's unfortunate.
All right, Mr. Abwedu, we want to thank you very much for your time with us tonight. John Abwedu is the...
Thank you very much. But before I go, I think the concern raised by Milante about the merging of the constitutional review. I think the constitutional review committee has its own challenges. You can't be putting together a plethora of issues and ask people to vote on it. Yes, so I think that there is a bit more problematic there. We should concentrate on what we are doing. Then possibly we'll come back again and look at it and see how best we can look at the details of the constitutional review.
All right, Mr. Abwedu, we want to thank you for your time with us. John Abwedu is the national organizer of the NPP. Let's also go to the phone lines. And Christine Osupari is the Director of Communications at the Electoral Commission. Good evening, Senya. Welcome to the program.
Yes, good evening and good evening to you.
Ms. Osupari, we can hardly hear you. And 5 days into the voters' registration exercise, how would you, the EC evaluate it?
Well, we think that the exercise is going well.
I myself have done some monitoring at some of the registration centers, and I think I'm impressed with what I saw. We're having fewer cases of equipment malfunctioning, and even where there are complaints about equipment, the technicians are on the spot to either replace or fix it so that they can continue with the registration. And again, on the issue of turnout, it seems to me that people are comparing this limited registration to the general registration exercise that we had in 2012. But let me explain that in limited registration, you do not expect that you'll find long queues at the registration centers. You know, the target group is always a small group. Unlike the general registration where all Ghanaians have to go and register, this time the target group is only those who have attained 18 years since the last registration in 2012. And there's very few Ghanaians who could not register even though they qualified in 2012. These are the people that we have given the opportunity to go and register. And if one considers the fact that they are using over 6,400 registration centers for this particular exercise, it is understandable that you won't find anything at all at many of the registration centers.
So it's not because of inadequate publicity?
No, I do not think so. I do not think so. Because Ghanaians really show a lot of interest when it comes to voter registration. Not just for voting, but you know, that card is used for a lot of purposes insofar as the Ghanaian society is concerned. People use the card for several transactions, and so everybody who qualifies is eager to get that card. And if there is that opportunity and the person qualifies, I believe that the person will readily welcome the opportunity. So the numbers we are seeing is quite realistic. It is the people who have come of age, and those who were qualified then but could not register that we are seeing at the centers. Indeed, if the number becomes too huge, then there will be cause for concern. The commission itself did a projection of registering between 800,000 to 1 million by the end of the 10 days exercise. And if we go way beyond that, that will be cause for concern. So we think that the turnout so far is encouraging and is a reflection of the situation on the ground.
And Ms. Osupari, how has the court case affected the registration exercise?
Well, the court case affected it in a way. First of all, because we had to put our public education on hold because the court ordered us to do so. And so when the court finally gave us the go-ahead, we had to spend a few days trying to repackage the message and again trying to develop a new message. So we lost some days in the publicity effort. And again, you know, it has been a lot of pressure on us because we should have been hearing the challenges that will be filed with the registration at this time. But unfortunately, we're yet to come to the end of the registration exercise. And so it's some time lost, and it's going to affect our calendar for the rest of the year.
And we have a lot of reports also from potential voters that they have been referred to areas where the registration center is very far from their homes. Why that?
Well, that is what we most of the time do if we are doing limited registration. You know, in limited registration, because we expect the numbers to be low, we do it at electoral area centers. So usually we'll give every electoral area one registration center, and we ask that the registration centers be cited as central locations within the electoral area so they become accessible to everybody in the electoral area who qualifies to be registered. In the past, we had very few electoral areas, and so people had to move long distances. But with the increase in electoral areas in 2010, we now have smaller electoral areas. So the size and distances are quite manageable this time.
Well, Ms. Osupai, we hear of prospective voters using birth certificates and weighing cards as ID cards at the registration centers. Are they supposed to go there with these ID?
No, madam. It's quite unfortunate that we are yet to investigate to find out whether indeed the allegation is true. I have heard some complaints from Ashanti region and somewhere in the Brong-Ahafo region. Kudu issued a preliminary report on their monitoring of the exercise, and they allege that they have come across situations where people have used documents other than what we specified in our public messages and then what was specified in CI-72. But we have not had any confirmation of that yet. And so we will investigate, and then the commission will decide what to do with such situations.
But briefly, under what circumstance can one register without any ID?
Well, the only condition for registering without any ID is that you have to find two registered voters to guarantee your registration. Let me say that we ask for the passport, the driver's license, the national identification card, and the old voter ID card for people who were probably registered voters before the biometric registration came into force in 2012. Those people may still have their old voter ID cards with them. We accept those ones. But for first-time registrants, they may not have any of those documents. And so if they are unable to produce the passport, driver's license, and the other documents, then the only other alternative open to them is for them to look for two people to guarantee their registration. And I do not think that it should be too difficult for any applicant to be able to find two people to support their registration if indeed they are genuine applicants who live in a community where people are ready to support them.
Mr. Osupai, we are very grateful for your time with us tonight. Christine.
Thank you very much for the opportunity.
Osupai is the Director of Public Affairs at the Electoral Commission. He's behind the news live on Radio Ghana. So on the limited voter registration, also joining me on the line is Paul Abrampa, who is an official of the Coalition of Domestic Election Observers, CODEL. And CODEL has been monitoring the registration exercise. Welcome to the program, Paul.
Thank you, my sister.
How would you describe the ongoing limited voters registration exercise?
I would say generally successful, generally.
Meaning you are satisfied with the processes of registration so far?
Partially. Let me say, comparing the 2012, the first time we used the biometric machines to register our people, to now, I would say yes, there's been some improvements. But there's more room for improvement. What I can say is that when we compare the 2012 to now, we witness often machines breaking down, violent issues in the registration centers. But now our observers' reports have shown that generally the machines have functioned well. We've not witnessed any violent incidents over there. So we can say yes, there have been some improvements. However, as we issued a statement today, you could see there are still some challenges that we are facing in some of the registration centers.
If you talk about challenges, can you mention some of the challenges you've observed or CODEL has observed so far?
Well, in trying to compile a credible voter register, the Electoral Commission by the 1992 Constitution is mandated to issue guidelines. And some of these things are actually put into CI to make a regulated activity, one of which is the required documents that registrants are supposed to bring for their registration. And when you look into it, some people are bringing other documents other than those specified in the CIs. For instance, when you go to Boko, Asuka, and other places, people are using weighing cards and birth certificates. And so shockingly, the registration issue officials are accepting them, and people have been registered using the birth certificates and weighing cards, which are not specified and are accepted in the CI. So shockingly, it's also even after the Supreme Court has ruled out the use of NHIS card for registration, people are still presenting the NHIS card for registration. So these are some of the few challenges that we are facing, coupled with the fact that in rural communities, people have not been coming to register because they claim registration centers are far from their communities, and comparing the traveling distance, bad roads, and costs involved, they prefer staying back than coming to register. So these are some of the few challenges. That's why I call the EC to intensify education, especially on the required documents for registration, and also the process of challenging, because in some of the centers, because people present documents that are not specified in the CI, tension created at the centers because people think people supposed to be or suspected to belong to one political party are being aided to register whether they have the required documents or not.
And briefly, Paul, how about the issue of security?
Well, it's unfortunate. But because he's not witnessed instead of conflict and violence, it's not being highlighted. But my sister, let me tell you, almost all, we've deployed 350 observers across the 10 regions of the country. And almost all the regions, most of our people are reporting that they've not sighted security personnel in the centers. I don't know the strategy that the police service is deploying. Sometimes they deploy per registration center, sometimes they deploy per roaming around registration centers. I don't know, but our people have not cited a police presence. And an incident happened at Asokwa, where supporters believed to be of the supporters of NDC stormed a registration center to prevent people who have mobilized to guarantee for registrants from doing so, because they claim people have been guaranteeing for more than 5 registrants. And it took some time before they were able to call in police personnel to intervene. So it tells you, if we had witnessed more of such incidents, we have a different story to tell. But I think because there are not much of such problems, we are not highlighting it.
All right. Paul, we want to thank you for your time with us tonight. Paul Abrahamensah is an official of the Coalition of Domestic Election Observers, Codeo. And on that note, we end tonight's edition of Behind the News. My producers were Christopher Sedu, Edmund Tete Brightagama, and John Kobe. Naomi Kone read the summary, and Hannah Owusu Bempa controlled the sounds. My name is Agatha Samwa, and you have a lovely weekend.